Now, just remember that this thing isn't as black as it appears.
Welcome to the Sound of Football podcast. I'm Graham Sibley, and I'm joined, as I have been for about 300 podcasts, by Terry DeFellin.
Hello.
How are you doing?
Very well, thank you.
Good. You? And of course, there is a little gap between you, between us, isn't there? Usually, this is where Jan stands, but he's in Broadstairs, so he's decided that the international break is a perfectly good time to have a little break of his own, or else he's run for the hills in blind panic.
Yes, that's entirely possible. He is, after all, a Sunderland fan.
Yes, yes. Now, we didn't talk about our own domestic clubs last week, did we? Because
no.
They all lost.
That's right, yes.
And unfortunately, this week, again, they all lost.
Yeah.
Last week, it was, oh dear, they've lost. That's annoying. This week, all hell's broken loose, isn't it? Now, there's panic everywhere.
Absolutely.
As Morrissey said, there's panic on the streets of London.
And indeed, to a lesser extent, in Sunderland as well.
Yes. To a lesser extent. But still, there is panic there, isn't there?
Yes, I'd say so. It's panic August time.
Yeah.
August panic is well upon us.
And everyone's panicking. So you've got managers panicking. You've got players panicking because the deadline's coming to an end. You've got fans panicking because their teams are losing. You've even got stewards panicking now. Panicking that goals are being celebrated.
Oh, yeah.
That was ugly, wasn't
that was
it?
All, yeah, that was all a bit unseemly, wasn't it? Yeah.
And now, usually on this podcast, we don't panic, do we? We actually like to look out and look at the other people who are losing their heads, don't we?
Yeah,
and mock them.
We like to laugh at people who are panicking.
Yes, we do.
Although, in fairness, actually, we are the ones panicking now. So
yes,
the laugh's on us, really.
Yeah, it is. And like everyone panicking, and with the transfer window coming, we thought we'd go and get an extravagant signing on the podcast for one episode, didn't we?
Yep, absolutely, in the hope that we can turn this ailing ship around.
Yes. And our panic buy is Matt Herman from the Talking Football podcast. Hello, Matt.
Hey, is this a soccer podcast? What am I doing here? How's it going, guys?
Yes.
I hope I'm not totally inappropriate to your team's needs and you're not just the best talent you could get your hands on in the waning days of the window.
No. We scouted you thoroughly, Matt, I can assure you. Yes. No, we haven't just watched a couple of DVDs of you recording podcasts. We know full well that you're up to the challenge.
Exactly. We didn't rely on Football Manager for our sort of signings.
No, this time.
Well done.
So, Matt, you're across football, aren't you? Is this the most panicky August we've ever seen?
Oh, I don't know. I mean, I feel like every August, and in truth, most Januaries as well, seem to bring in a kind of pall over the game that I personally like to sit out as much as possible. I mean, the team that I'm most invested in, Hertha Berlin, in the Bundesliga, you know, never really have the money to splash the cash at the end of the window anyway. And a lot of the hype that surrounds the end of the window in England is pretty off-putting to me.
I think we've kind of got used to it now, isn't it? It's all part of the thing about, you know, the post-bank holiday blues, isn't it, really? You think, well, at least I've got the end of the transfer window to look forward to.
Yeah, it's that last hurrah before the long wait to Christmas. Yeah, you have the bank holiday weekend, and then you have transfer deadline day, and then basically that's your lot until Christmas.
That really is it. That's how small our lives are.
Obviously there's weekly football matches, but who gives a toss about those, eh?
This whole thing at the moment, this is really, really panicking about lots of different things now, isn't it? I mean, there is, of course, Arsenal are the most panic-laden side at the moment, if you were to believe every newspaper report you read. Now, I'm an Arsenal fan. You know, I don't mind admitting it. I'm amongst friends here. And I've been listening to this for the last decade of Arsenal not being very good. And yes, Sunday's performance against Liverpool was pretty atrocious. I mean, I've seen Arsenal play bad over my lifetime. Mm-hmm. But this was really awful. But it wasn't any worse than when we got took apart at White Hart Lane just back in April. And that day we should have been beaten 4-0, but we weren't. We only conceded 2 that day, miraculously.
Was it worse than losing at Selhurst Park? because an opportunity for me to raise that is a root come. So
yeah. It was a similar performance actually. Yeah. I mean, but actually, no, I think we played better against Palace.
It's the ratcheting up, though.
Yeah, it is.
It's the combination
of
results.
Yeah. I think as well, is it the fact that over the summer, you've got a chance to wipe the slate clean, haven't you, really? And you've got, we had the Charity Shield as well, and there was the FA Cup. And of course, you know, all the Wenger out people were all a bit...
Chelsea in the cup, signed a new contract. And there's also the adoption of the back three by Wenger as well towards the back end of last season. So all suggesting that perhaps the winds have changed.
Yeah.
And that, you know, maybe they were in for
a decent season. We did have that back three for that Tottenham game, though. That was, I think, the third game we'd played it.
Yeah.
Panicking happened. I mean, like your club as well, Palace, they're in panic, aren't they?
Yeah, more or less, yeah, to the point where they're desperately trying to prize Sacco away from Liverpool, which... I mean, he's a wonderful character and an absolute sort of boss centre half, but I don't think he's really necessarily a player that would fit into what De Boer is trying to do, and I wonder to what extent that's they're trying to impose upon him. But it almost seems like he was great for us on loan towards the back end of last season. Let's get him in now. When really, probably what we want to do is we want to go back in time and convince Sam Allardyce to not resign.
Yeah.
And then, then we wouldn't be in this position.
Now, Matt, you stay across German media. Now, Cologne have lost their first two games and Bremen have lost their first two games. Are the alarm bells ringing all across the German sports pages to say, oh my God, the sky is falling in?
No, not with those two teams particularly. It's, you know, it's my impression that both of those teams, I mean, Cologne have built their success a little bit more slowly and a bit more, solidly, shall we say. But I think that there always was a sense, at least among the more realistic people, that this was a team that was overachieving and that for them to have a dip in form at the beginning of the season is just something that's going to happen. I mean, it was quite ominous to have it happen the first couple of games without their big man, Anthony Modeste, and the fact that they're not finding a lot of joy going forward points to the fact that that's going to be a big problem. But, you know, I think expectations at Cologne sometimes get blown out of proportion by the weirdness of their support. But ultimately, people aren't freaking out that bad. I think the people who are a little bit more upset have got to be, I don't know, maybe the likes of Leverkusen, who haven't, you know, converted any of their good play into points. They really disappointed last year, and people were expecting them to bounce back. Nobody's really put their stamp on this new season in the Bundesliga, aside from, you know, the likely faces of Bayern and Dortmund and the entirely unlikely faces of Hamburg and Hanover.
Terry, I mean, that sums up the Bundesliga. Would you say that in the
all in a bow?
Would you say that the Premier League is just quite happy that Liverpool and Man United are doing well, and that it's fine that all these London clubs are doing pretty poorly? Because we got West Ham, who are looking like, well, Bilic is trying to beat Frank Ribery as the first manager to be fired. And also you've got the worries that everyone had about Tottenham not producing at Wembley, seemingly coming to fruition with a late equaliser they conceded against Burnley at the weekend.
Well, I think that when you've got slightly wider selection in England of big, traditionally successful clubs to pick from, although the London clubs are popular and also popular internationally, the real powerhouse in England is in the North West. And has been for some time now. It's Manchester United or it's Liverpool, Manchester City, with the occasional forays elsewhere in the country. But that's where the truly popular clubs are. So I think as long as United and Liverpool are winning football matches, then what goes on elsewhere is column entries and clicks and airtime in the case of Sky Sports News.
Yeah, I suppose, Matt, this is the key problem, though, isn't it? Is that how do we know what is a real crisis for a football club and what is just something that fills up column inches and actually gets loads and loads of clicks?
Yeah, I wonder that all the time. And I feel like the particularities of the media landscape here in England, by which I mean, you know, the sheer number of mass circulation newspapers combined with the fact that the Premier League is such a magnet for like global clickbait culture. You know, I mean, there's basically like any one of the big sort of four, five, six biggest clubs, you can publish the most threadbare of rumors and or fan service of retweeting somebody's or repackaging somebody's Instagram post and get just a ton of traffic. And that's become a part of the culture of the game here, that everything is so overheated. When players or teams are doing well, it becomes this sort of overheated joy. And if they're not, it becomes the sky is falling. I think that that's in part something that fans here enjoy. I think that that's sort of become part of the banter around the game. Sorry, I'll bring that word into.
Is it banter or panto? It's more like pantomime, isn't it? Really?
Sure. Yeah, I can buy that. I don't know, Terry. Do Palace look as bad to you as everyone says that they look? I mean, when I heard that they got DeBoer in as their new coach, I thought that that was a good move, but I thought it was also a very bold and somewhat risky move. You just said a minute ago that you're now pining for the days of Sam Allardyce, or maybe I'm reading too far into that statement. But surely if you make a bold move, you have to be ready to, you know, see it through for a while, more than three games or whatever.
Oh, very definitely, yes. I was extremely excited when he got the job, and I was extremely excited up until, you know, well, about 5 minutes after the Huddersfield game finished. It's Palace, a traditionally small club, don't get managers of the profile of Frank de Boer, so it is exciting. But yeah, he wants us to play like Ajax. And, you know, we were playing under Sam Allardyce at the back end of last season. And so, you know, that's some hefty transition to make, particularly when you consider how few signings Crystal Palace have made during the summer. I mean, they've only really signed sort of three players, and also Zaha is injured. So, you know, it's a mighty transition. I just think that we're all a bit shocked that, one, it's been so poor, and also not having scored any goals. Mm-hmm. The other way of looking at it is these is only three games. One of those games was against Liverpool, for which we lost narrowly. Mm-hmm. Another game was against Swansea, who we just never seem to be able to get one over, even though they are horrific, basically. We should be able to beat them, but
Arsenal or Stoke.
It's a bit like they're a bit of a bogey team for us. If you look at it in that way, and then you could look at the Huddersfield match and say, well, Huddersfield have been got out of the blocks really at the final whistle at Wembley Stadium in the playoff, and they knew that they were going to be, they'd have to be ready, and they were able to start their pre-season preparation much, much earlier than Palace did because of all the managerial changes and confusion that lie therein. So you could construct pretty healthy reasons for why Palace have lost those three games. At separate from the fact that they don't appear to be playing terribly well under the new coach as well. So I think that it is important to not panic if you're in a position where you're having to make decisions. But as a supporter, it's entirely understandable, and I'm certainly panicking.
Well, I suppose especially if the cheque has just left your bank account for a season ticket and you've got this to look forward to for the next 9 months.
Well, yeah, exactly. And I mean, also when, you know, I mean, but Palace have gone through so many managers, and this is the case of anybody who signs a new coach. I assume it's like a 3-year contract.
Yeah.
You know, is this another manager that we're going to end up paying off, you know, and paying up in their contract in full? And also, as it's been pointed out on other podcasts, where do Palace go after De Boer? Yeah. I mean, we've kind of chewed up and spat out, or been spat out by, the other likely candidates. So we're running out of Red Adairs to come in and sort us out. And so it doesn't look very good. I think we're just going to have to stick to our guns and hope it works out, and hopefully make a couple of signings before the deadline passes. But that seems unlikely, frankly.
Matt, you mentioned before about the pressures of especially the English media, with lots and lots of different sources coming together, lots of different outlets as well. What do you think is the pressure? How much pressure do you think there is on say, a Sunday paper columnist to get the inside scoop on clubs as to why clubs like Arsenal are seemingly in meltdown? Do you think there is a pressure from editors to say, look, the Mail on Sunday has got a two-page spread on this. Why don't we have all this information? Why don't we have this internal information? So is this just pushing everyone to just write huge amounts on sources close to the club or sources close to the player, say?
I definitely think so. I mean, you know, the way media seems to go at clubs, or at least the sort of amount of access that reporters have to a club, not that I've ever been a beat writer, but I know that clubs control access to players very, very strongly. And also there's just not a lot to be gained from, you know, sort of burning your teammates or burning the staff if you want to actually have a long and happy career somewhere. I mean, maybe if you're pushing for a move, you might be spilling some beans to a reporter about what's going wrong. But yeah.
By comparison, Matt, to Germany, I'm not across the German media as well as you are. The languages are still very much a restriction for me. But my impression is that the German football media, although yeah, it has its Sky Sports, and of course it has Bild, and it'll have the regional newspapers such as Express in Cologne and Mopo up in the north, but yeah, perhaps it's not quite so frantic as it is in England. Is that an accurate assessment? And if it is, why do you suppose that is?
Oh, I think it definitely is accurate. I mean, I think that for the most part, it's just because the sort of media habits of you know, German media consumers are different. You mentioned the sort of tabloid types, the Mopos, the Expresses, the Bilds. Those are very powerful newspapers, but you don't have the sort of multiple national newspapers along the lines of, you know, the Mail, the Express, the Sun, the Mirror, all of whom have pretty substantial day-to-day football writing departments, and many of which are putting out a pretty high volume of rumor-driven stories, whether that be transfer rumors or you know, training ground bust-ups or what have you. I mean, the echo chamber just doesn't have as many places to bounce in Germany. I mean, if you are a big reader about any one club or about the league, you'll find very similar stories to what you would find in the Mail or in the Sun or what have you. But they just don't seem to get the same kind of traction either in Germany or certainly not globally. I mean, I'm sorry for the Bundesliga's sake because they're making less money, but you know, I don't think that there are, you know, tens of thousands of readers in Malaysia, you know, reading the reports about what happened in Schalke training every day with the way that they are.
Coming as we are to an international break, what usually happens for Arsenal players is they go and join up with their national teams, and then they get interviewed by their the home outlets. And of course, what they do is they have a nice, frank conversation in the manner that they would do if they were at home. And of course, when it's translated back into English, they say things that they would never say to English reporters, or they say things that can be taken slightly the wrong way. I mean, usually they do mean what they're saying, but a lot of the time they can be blown out of proportion, especially by the sort of things you don't say to British journalists, because you know they'll be taken out of proportion.
I mean, I have some experience in this matter, being somebody who translates quite a lot of players' quotes out of German, and in some cases have, you know, done ripped versions of German publication stories for the Mail when I worked there for a little while. You know, there is a lot of bad translation out there. I mean, even reputable outlets like wire services, I'll see, you know, whether it's DPA, AFP, or Reuters, who will put out a quote done into English. I don't know who does the translation, whether they have an axe to grind or whether they're simply not very experienced, but they'll write something that seems much more inflammatory in English than what it is in the original language. When you know what the person said in German, you know that the word wahnsinnig doesn't actually mean, you know, crazy or you know, desperately. It's just another sort of word of emphasis. And you know, if you translate something directly in any language, there's going to be those foibles where it seems like, oh, this guy's nuts. He's you know, slagging off his coach. And really, it's nothing of the kind.
Hmm. So we're being misled. Fake news.
Yeah, I for one am shocked that we're being misled.
Well, I suppose that is the thing. I mean, like fake news is obviously a big thing now, but really in football we've had it for years, haven't we? We've never actually got used to it. And now that you know, every news outlet is a fake news outlet, and everyone's like not checking their sources and publishing whatever they damn well please. Yeah, obviously for us football fans, we should be used to this, shouldn't we?
A lot of the fake news in football media, I think, is driven by people within power, positions of power, either at a football club or with a player, who are looking to pursue an agenda. So they'll be looking to push an editor or a journalist to try and engineer a move for a player, or to try and get a player in. Or, I mean, this happens in Germany as well. I think I mentioned last week about the whole situation with Thomas Tuchel and and the hierarchy at Borussia Dortmund, and the media was used. Whether or not that's fake news, I don't know, but it's certainly the football fan is used to fake news, and I think is actually able to pass that fake news and go, well, it's paper talk.
Yeah.
See it for what it is. I heard a fantastic expression actually on another podcast, an Italian phrase, it's not true, but I still believe it.
Right.
And it was on the Totally Football Show. Our name check, it was James Winston. I think we're completely across that as football fans, to have been. It's the people in the rest of the world who suddenly been confronted in elections and stuff like that, where it becomes tricky. But in football, I mean, in fairness, it's a leisure activity, and in that respect, it's harmless.
Yeah. I suppose that's another thing though, Matt, isn't it? Because it's not just the pressures of players and their managers. There are the media and the players and former players and all their associated agents as well that go between them and try to sort out signings and things like that and the best for those players. And because agents are also so involved in the media as well, you can never be sure of what message you're receiving or what direction it's actually coming from, or the whole purpose of the scare story or the rumor or whatever.
Yeah, I mean, it seems to me that because clubs have become so tight-lipped with the way that they want to control the message and they want to control the access to their players, I mean, it's become a bit of a good cop, bad cop routine. You know, reporters basically turn to agents when they want access, or they want quotes, or they want the inside dope, because they know they can't get that from the clubs, or they can't get that from the player directly. They don't give out phone numbers like they did in the old days. And, you know, anytime it passes through that agent filter, there's going to be some extra
spice on it, isn't it? Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, a little extra mustard.
Yeah, exactly. Who doesn't want a bit of extra along there, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
And of course, a lot of these agents are salesmen, so they bring it across in a very, very, very listenable style, don't they?
Yeah, they're good marketers. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, totally,
of course. Totally. And that's what, it's all entertainment, isn't it? This is what sports pages are, because it's not news. Sky Sports News isn't actually news.
No,
it's about sport.
It's not even it's not even sports news. It's news about Sky Sports most of the time.
Yes.
So it's an infotainment channel for its numerous and varied Sky Sports offering. So it's not news. I mean, you could go deeper and say there's elements to football and football finance, which is news and it is important. And of course, I mean, I think this conversation is not within that context, the context of corruption and, you know, malfeasance and financial fair play and stuff like that.
It does lean into it, doesn't it? Really,
but it isn't that far to go into before it does. So it's easy. It's we should be careful to not place too much powder puff on these topics, because they are fantastic sums of money that changing hands.
Yeah,
and that does bear some scrutiny.
Indeed, how much scrutiny, Matt?
Oh, I mean, it's funny. There is always a lot of people up in arms about money in football. Dembélé la frappe! And I certainly find it a bit off-putting at times, but I still can't gin up a whole lot of seriousness about it, other than when we get into issues of people being mistreated. You know, your Qatar or Russia World Cup stadium workers and that sort of stuff. That is real news. But anything that has to do with some player's salary or some sort of allegedly dodgy deal,
I think
it just doesn't bother me that much.
When people say like how much money Neymar was, the amount of money was spent on him, I try to think, well, yeah, but they spent more on the last Transformers film.
Exactly. Hmm. Exactly. And that gave people a really bad time.
Yes. Well, yeah. talking about a bad time. I mean, I do feel like we've brought everyone down, I think, a bit. Sort of like we try not to sort of like tear football apart a bit on this podcast because we love football, don't we?
Mm, yeah.
Even when it betrays us.
Yes. Yes.
Even, like it has done.
Like it has done this weekend.
Yeah. So this season
keep
so far.
Coming back.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. We'll take it back. Of course we will.
Yeah.
Because we love it.
Do you have an opinion on Arsene Wenger? Has your opinion changed on Arsene Wenger, Graham? Do you think that? The writing's on the wall, so to speak?
In the fact that he's 67, yes, it is on the wall. He's going to go sooner or later. I mean, I think this is going to be his last season.
Though
he got a two-year
deal. 2 years, yeah.
Yeah, I think they've just bumped up his pension a bit there.
Right.
But, yeah, I think as soon as they find someone...
You can't see anyone coming in sooner than that. You think that's...
I strongly doubt that he'll be out before the end of the year. I think at the end of the season, I think he'll be gone then.
Mm.
That's my...
How many seasons have you started off feeling that way, though?
I think this one is different, actually, this time. I mean, I'm not really strong one way or the other with him. I refuse to let football get me angry like so many others. I look at it and I think, oh, that's disappointing. But, you know, it was a lovely day on Sunday. So actually, to turn off the football at half time and then go out and sit on my patio, Terry would have said... Like he would have run a bath on that time, to quote him from earlier podcast.
Indeed.
I didn't. I went outside, had a beer, and I had a thoroughly present Sunday afternoon, actually, while everyone else was seething.
Well, I was actually watching Bundesliga, so I didn't actually watch the game at all. So
no,
I just went on Twitter and going, oh, blimey, it's all kicking off on Twitter.
Yes.
And then I thought, oh, that's because it's Liverpool. Anyway, I can't remember the game I was watching. It was it would have been Schalke, wouldn't it? Yeah.
Oh.
Yes, it was Schalke versus Hannover. Of course it was. Hannover beat Schalke 1-0. Yeah, now that was a game.
Sounds it.
Yeah, it wasn't. It was great. It wasn't Liverpool 4 Arsenal 0, admittedly. But it was still pretty decent.
Well, I think, as I say, we've brought enough horrors down on people with this panicky podcast. And I hope we haven't really like made you reconsider things about your life and your life choices as regards to football. But really, football's great, and next week is always going to be another game, isn't it?
But we've got international football as well, too. A bit of a palate cleanser as well.
That's right.
Yeah, some World Cup action.
Mm.
Yes. Do you look forward to the international breaks, Matt?
Oh, I do, only in the sense that it gives me a little break from the sort of week-to-week covering of football. I'm a little bit excited just because there's something at stake for my country. I mean, U.S. has not yet booked its passage to Russia, so they still have some games to win. I mean, it's very difficult for me to watch them because they are on extremely inopportune times for me here in England, but I have a little bit invested.
Yeah, so they got off to a bit of a slow start, but they're getting back into it now. It looks like it's going to be them, Mexico and Costa Rica, coming through from the group,
isn't it? I'm not too terrible worried, but they do have – they're at home to Costa Rica, which is – should win, but they, they're a tough opponent. And then they're away to Honduras and basically away to anybody in CONCACAF, the kind of, officiating you're going to get, the quality of pitch you're going to get, the number of bags of urine you're going to be hit with. It's not going to be easy anywhere you go. So
that's the sort of reporting we want. That's the sort of stuff we're denied, you see.
No
one ever mentions the bags of urine.
No, I must confess,
San Marino.
I don't think we've ever discussed bags of urine on this podcast.
Well, there you go. I'm going to use it as one of the labels on our blog post.
I think that's a great idea. Yeah.
There's some great qualifiers this weekend on this international break. Argentina, Uruguay. That's going to be a good one because the South American qualification. I think there's 6 points that separate in 7 teams.
Wow.
Yeah, after 14 games, and there's so it's still. I mean, Brazil have
scuttling over their eyes.
They're already there, but yeah, Argentina, Uruguay, they've all got it still to do.
Are Brazil actually already there?
They are already there.
That's locked in, is it?
Yeah, right, locked in. Good. They are good, a locked in team to the World Cup.
Cool. So, how long do the US need before they make it? How many more points do you think they need, Matt?
I think if they were to win both of these games, I think that would pretty much see them through.
Yeah,
I mean, maybe 4 points might even do it.
I think it's only Panama that can really knock them out there. So I think it really depends on what they're up to. I think a good couple of wins will see them through. And I think even if they finish fourth, they've got a playoff against an Asian team, I think.
Yep.
Yeah, mm-hmm. So which could be Uzbekistan or Saudi Arabia.
Ooh.
I think at the moment.
Or Israel.
USA versus Saudi Arabia. That'll make a great two-leg game, wouldn't it?
Yeah, absolutely.
They might even get Trump to show up to that one.
Well, in Europe, of course, we've got a couple of games as well. I know England are playing Malta, but don't watch it. But, well, it's my turn this week to do the box set. So I've reviewed a lot of the weekend fixtures, including Nigeria-Cameroon. Brilliant weekend if you can grab hold of some feeds of the African qualification, because they're all back-to-back, head-to-head ties. So Nigeria play Cameroon, and then the following week, Cameroon play Nigeria.
Nice.
And that's all the way across the qualification. So and, all the teams play each other twice in the space of about 3 or 4 days.
Wow. Yeah, that's a good format.
Great, isn't it? And it's right in the middle of their group stage. So yes. they really cram it together at the end there. So BT have picked up a couple of games. They picked up that Nigeria-Cameroon game on Friday. And I think they've got Senegal-Burkina Faso, I think, late on Saturday. So if you really want to watch Wales v Austria all the way through, you can do. But 9 o'clock, why not go on over to BT Sport One?
Well, Spain v Italy is, in fairness, on more or less the same. Don't worry, it's on at quarter to eight, isn't it?
That kicks off at quarter to eight with the Wales Austria game.
That should be a game.
That should be a game.
It's no Wales v Austria, I'll grant you. But it's still
going to be. What is?
Yeah, well, quite so. Yeah.
Well, Matt, thanks a lot for coming along and filling this yam-shaped hole. Did you enjoy it?
Oh, definitely. I just hope you don't sell me at the next window.
Oh, would we do that?
Would we do that? No, we haven't done that.
No, I think we might loan you to Palace, though, if that's okay. But I think it would be for your development. That would
anything
be real.
Anything for Jerry.
Yeah. but I think that's all we've got time for this week. So from me, Graham Sibley, from Matt Herman, and from Terry Fellon, it's goodbye.
Goodbye.
See ya.
You can contact us through our website, sofpodcast.com, via Twitter, @soundoffootball, or on facebook.com/soundoffootball.
Hey, is this a soccer podcast? What am I doing here?